It's the Agribusiness Report. Bob Maurer is our guest today. We'll talk markets in a moment. First off, summer heat wave. Brad Rippey, meteorologist, USDA.
Heat has been expansive this warm season across the northern hemisphere. It got an early start in the higher latitudes, and now we've seen extreme heat waves across Canada, leading to wildfires, and more recently across Europe. We've also seen extreme heat in the southern United States. We got an early start to summer in the deep south. Hottest June on record in Gulf Coast communities like Del Rio, Texas, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And now for July, it has gotten worse in the southern United States. A whole host of cities with long-term records on track to set their warmest July on record, stretching all the way from Phoenix, Arizona, to Key West and Miami, Florida.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. We'll have some contact information in just a few moments. But, Bob, we're now firmly into the third quarter. And as we move firmly into the third quarter, that gives us some indication that we're moving out of summer. Does that mean that demand for beef and the grilling season, does that mean that that kind of withers away, or is there still strength there for us?
I think there's still strength. I think it's a little premature to say summer's going away. I know every day that goes by, we get closer to the backside of the calendar, you know, in the end of the calendar than we were in the beginning. But, you know, nonetheless, it is end of July, and we are going into August. August tends to be one of the hotter months on average, especially up by me. And I know you guys have been suffering through some heat down there too. But all in all, it's not over yet. I mean, I know that school starts in a couple weeks, many places, either grade school kids and high school kids, you know, the K-12 are going to be, you know, heading back. So things get a little slower around events, family events. But nonetheless, I think on the weekends and such, there's still opportunities for the demand to still be there. And then, you know, I know also all the college kids going back, and then I don't know, some that are already heading back now, as a matter of fact, just to kind of get a jump start on this academic year, but also in the bulk probably in the next couple few weeks. So similar story there. So things tend to slow down a little bit, but I don't think that we're really at a fact in a moment where it's really going to abate by much. And I think that things still look pretty solid for the cattle markets. If we look at it, though, to get into a bit of the more of the nitty-gritty there, I mean, the market looks solid. It's had its fluctuations. There's no doubt about it. When I say the market, I'm talking about the live cattle futures. We have seen a bit of a push down in the last week and a half or so, but it also coincided with some big rallies in the input market, the grains. And since a couple weeks ago, the markets have kind of the grain markets have kind of fallen. And cattle markets are still sitting here in this little corrective zone. But I think that if the grain markets continue to move lower, I think that we're going to find some newfound buying. And then it's going to be a matter of kind of a wait and see. I mean, I'm not one to really call, tops or bottoms in the marketplace by any means. I kind of let the market tip its hand. And each time we've had a pretty considerable dip in prices for the live cattle futures, it's been met with some ultimate buying, which is pushed into new swing highs. So once that pattern fails, you know, if we try to get another push to the upside and it fails, then that might be the signal that things are slowing down a little bit more than I expect. But at the moment, I think everything is just kind of going along with that pattern where rally, break, new highs, then break, then new highs, then break. And I don't see us breaking out of that pattern quite yet for a couple of reasons. Technically speaking, like I just mentioned, I think that's just the overall characteristic in the market right now. And then until something more material comes along, I think that technically speaking, those who look at the market, not so much in terms of the fundamentals, but just the price action, are going to be looking to buy the dips. And then also those who are, you know, fundamentally trading the market, things still look pretty good. In particular, I'm talking about weights. Average estimated dress cattle weight last week was 813 pounds. The five-year average for that week is 818. So weights are still a little bit on the lighter side in terms of the structure of the market right now. Packers are working with you know, tighter margins than we've seen in quite a while, and they have reduced their slaughter speeds. But nonetheless, we'll see how that all plays out. I still think that they want to have enough throughput to keep things moving along. So it's really just a standoff at the moment. And I think that's one of the things that we've seen in the pricing over the last week and a half or so, a standoff between the packers and the feedlots. So we'll see how that plays out. But I think things still look structurally strong. We're even at tighter margins. They're going to work to kind of keep things moving along. And at some point, you know, I think we'll probably pay up. We'll see how that goes. The slaughter to that point was a little bit weaker last week. Last week's slaughter was 619,000 head. That was 5,000 less than a week ago, 40,000 head less than a year ago. And, you know, that kind of shows a little bit at the moment that Packers have slowed things down a little bit. Cash this week is called steady to somewhat a little bit better. And then in terms of the feeder cattle market, I think things look pretty strong there still, especially the fact that we've seen these grain prices come off. So that tends to be a buoyant factor on the bullish side for feeder cattle, obviously. And then also there's still good demand out there in the country. So I think things are looking fairly good. Again, we've been talking for years, and markets are going to have these ebbs and flows. So I'm not necessarily saying now's the time to buy. We'll kind of watch the market and look for when the market starts tipping its hand as to when it starts buying some dips. A lot of people start leaning on technicals like moving averages and stuff. So those who are involved with the marketplace can kind of throw those up on their chart and see where things are landing in terms of some of those moving averages and lagging indicators supporting the market, and then take it from there. So net-net, I think things look solid. I think we still got at least a couple more weeks until the bulk of students are going back into school. So I think the demand will be there for the next couple of weeks, and then we'll see what happens after that.
Okay, let's swing from there over to the row crops. It was really an off day on Monday for the row crops to finish out the month of July. Any ideas on where the trade is expecting things to go as we move into August?
Well, that's always the crystal ball question I can never really answer solidly, but I think that those items out there that are the macro inputs into affecting the markets most are still going to stick around for some time. And what I'm referring to is weather, I'm referring to war, and I'm referring to yields, and that yields kind of plays on the weather thing. And, you know, we've seen some pretty good volatility, haven't we? I mean, if you look at the corn futures, that thing, the December corn topped off a month ago-ish or so, like mid-June at around 630, a bushel, breaks all the way down to roughly about 481, so a massive break, and then about a 50% rally from there, and then another break over the last 4 or 5 days. And this is following those two things, the war impacts that Russia's having on in terms of the logistical issues with getting the grain out of Ukraine, and then also just the weather. I mean, we went through some pretty hot, dry period there, and not everywhere is looking better by any means, but many places are looking better. I know Midwest, west of me, so I'm in Illinois, and west of me have gotten some pretty darn good precipitation, and the weather has definitely broken. I mean, it was so hot and so muggy for a while, and finally we got a little bit lower humidity and the temperature is abated quite a bit, and we are still supposed to get some precipitation here and there. So things are kind of turned the corner a little bit in terms of the overall, I guess, pattern for the weather. I mean, obviously it could change, right? Everybody's looking at that 1 to 5 and 6 to 10 day forecast to kind of read the tea leaves and see what impact it could have on the yields. But really those three things are still definitely at play. I mean, if we break it down individually and you look at wheat, for example, obviously it's got some pressure from corn and beans and the breaks that it's seen in that price. We know about the uncertainty in the Black Sea. We know about those new port attacks from Russia. So to my point earlier, that's still in play. Looking at some of the fundamental stuff that we would normally look at, there's been a slight increase in the Russian wheat crop estimates by Sovcom. So that would be a bearish element in the wheat market. And even so, with what's all going on in the Ukraine, their total exports for the last 12 months were up 34% year on year. And I think there's an anticipation right now that Europe's going to do its darndest to try to figure out a way to at least keep that supply coming out of the Ukraine. A lot of variables there, right? You never know what's going to happen next. But I think that the fact that the port is closed basically wasn't an unexpected event, and I think that they're going to do their best to try and get that product onto the world market. So we'll see how that all plays out. I guess one thing we'll keep an eye on is what's going on in Canada in terms of wheat, with a lot of their wheat still remaining a little bit too dry, and that's going into early August, so in the next couple of weeks or so. And in terms of precip up there, you know, again, to my point about the weather, things are looking a little bit more on the drier side than they would want to see. So we'll see how that plays out with the wheat futures there. And then in terms of corn and soybeans, it's really just a guesstimate on what people are thinking, what traders are thinking in terms of the yields. Now, I just happened, just a quick little anecdote, I just happened to be in Sycamore, Illinois, which is about 45 minutes west and just barely south of me. And it's a huge agriculture area, huge, right? And I actually have some relatives that have a decent amount of land there. And we drove up to a restaurant, and right next to us was corn and soybean fields, and things did not look bad at all. I mean, I just took a minute just to walk the field a little bit just to kind of gauge it out. And things, from my perspective, you know, boots on the ground up here in Illinois, and in particular that particular area, look pretty darn good. So, I mean, if that's generally the case, which I can't say it is, but because we've gotten some decent weather here, but if that's, you know, kind of where we're at in many parts, especially in Illinois, being a big producer, then I think that that average national yield is probably going to stay, you know, closer to what's expected right now than not. I mean, obviously we got some time to go, but weather right now seems conducive to the back half of pollination, wherever it needs to get done. And then in terms of soybeans, clearly, you know, starting tomorrow in August, that's going to be, the weather's going to be key in terms of the pollination there. So we'll have to see how that evolves. So that's where we're at right now. Markets are falling back a little bit, as we know, with soybeans breaking pretty hard today, gap lower. So that's usually a technically bearish sign. We'll just have to see where this thing wants to slow down. And then I think that it'll go back to the week to weeks. And the first bit of new news that we're going to get, by the way, is this afternoon's crop condition indices. So we'll see what the USDA did in terms of the quantity of the crop in poor to very poor or good to excellent categories. And I think the market's probably going to trade that primarily tonight, and then we'll see what happens from here.
Okay. If we want to talk one-on-one, can we do that?
Sure. One-on-one. The number is 312-987-2053, or you can reach me by email at bmauer@manducatrading.com, or just come up, visit our websites, www.manducatrading.com or www.myfuturesadvisor.com.
Bob Mauer, Manduca Trading, Chicago, on today's Agribusiness Report.
Supporting the High Plains cotton producer is the number one priority for Plains cotton growers. Since its inception in 1956, PCG has focused on being the advocate for High Plains cotton and a respected voice on cotton issues. Protecting the interest of the High Plains cotton producer requires a dependable, dedicated organization focused on getting results, and cotton producers depend on the organization they founded, Plains Cotton Growers. From the halls of Congress to the turn rows of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest, Bob Mauer, Manduca Trading in Chicago.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading in Chicago, our special guest online at myfuturesadvisor.com.
At Plains Cotton Cooperative Association, our mission is to ensure the long-term profitability of our grower owners through value-added marketing programs and through services to their gins. As a true cooperative, we pay dividends back to our grower owners to financially strengthen their farming operations, whether in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, or New Mexico. Rest assured, at PCCA, we make money for you, not from you.
American agriculture creates millions of jobs, all the while feeding and clothing the world. But with many policymakers so removed from the farm, attacks on farm policy threaten our livelihood and quality of life in rural America. Our strength is our willingness to work together for the benefit of all. That's why business and farm leaders have formed the Southwest Council of Agribusiness to defend the bedrock of our economy and our way of life. This is Larry Combest. The Southwest Council of Agribusiness is at southwest-council.com.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Food prices in general this year are expected to top last year by about 5 or 6%, but what about 2024?
We are looking at food prices returning towards their historical normal growth rates of around 2%.
And USDA economist Matt McLaughlin says grocery store food prices may go up only about 1% in 24. But he also says don't dare carve any of those numbers in stone. Those are midpoints in a wide range of possible scenarios. He says the forecast model for grocery store food prices does have 1% as the midpoint, but it has prices possibly falling as much as 6.8%, going up all the way to increasing by over 9%. So forecasters wisely giving themselves a lot of wiggle room because
there could be a set of unforeseen events between here and the end of 2024.
We don't even know how 23 is going to turn out, let alone 24. It's sort of like predicting this week who's going to win the Super Bowl before training camp's even over. Gary Crawford, Washington.